Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
あ、ここいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ？どこにいるのかな？見えない？
あ、こんなところ
だ。あ、あ、What's good, Internet? It is February 24th, 2017. I am Austin Walker, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio. Joining me, Patrick Klepek. How are you doing, Patrick?
I'm not playing Zelda.
I am. Already, watch this shit. This is it.
Oh, you monster! Does the embargo say you're allowed to show us a Switch on a Skype call?
Take that, Bacoblin. I'm gonna put this down. Okay. Hi, I'm back from vacation. Well, I'm not. I'm actually on vacation.
I was gonna say, yeah, you're just kind of taking a break for this.
Danielle is off today because she's been holding it down while I've been out of town for a week. But I'm back in town. I'm in Queens. You are at home in Chicago.
Yep.
I am playing Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild. I had like a really good vacation, and then I got to come home, and then
go on a virtual vacation.
Well, like literally, the first thing I did was I got off my plane at JFK. I got my Lyft driver, and I was like, you got to take me to the office. Take me to the Switch. And I walked into the office at 11 at night, and CL, my boss, was still there, because, like, everybody just puts in hours at Vice. And she was like, what the fuck are you doing here? You're not allowed to be here. You're still on vacation. Shouldn't you be in LA? This was, like, Wednesday night. I was like, I just got back in. I'm, like, stumbling over my words because I'm, like, so exhausted because I didn't expect to have to talk to anybody. And also because there was, like, something a little shameful about, like, I was coming to work at 11 p.m.
Like, even though you were a man, the editor-in-chief of a video game website, you were ashamed that you were coming to your office to come pick up a video game console to take home.
It was 11 p.m. because, like, there's, like... She could have asked and didn't. Why didn't you just wake up and come in the morning to get it? And the answer was because, like, it was only 11 p.m. I could still get a couple of Zelda hours in before I go to bed.
Also, then, you know, you at least do the setup and you're good to go in the morning with your coffee
right,
when, like, none of that
saying.
Taking a cab to the office
that's
nonsense.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. Like, I want to go in and I have to see people. That's the other thing is if you go to an office during office, like, hours or when people
then
are
it's an office.
Stuff, right. Then I have to, like, get, like, I promise you I will be put in a meeting if I step into that office tomorrow on Saturday somehow I'll get into a meeting. So it's very important to not be at the office during your vacation. That's my advice to everybody. Instead, what you should do is line up your office or your vacation such that you have a really fun game to play during it. So,
yeah, you mentioned line up to like Horizon to Zelda Breath
right.
of the Wild. Like there are worse stretches of video games to have to collide into.
Right, like, so the first thing I did when I got on vacation, like, literally the first thing I did was beat Horizon. I'd already started playing it last week, I guess, or 2 weeks ago now.
Yeah, I actually finished it this morning.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We should talk about that, like, at least a little bit, because for me, it really does frame a lot of my feelings about Zelda, which I think we might end up talking about a lot today, because it's a big one. So what did you think about Horizon?
Generally speaking, I really enjoyed it. I'm higher on it than you are, or
sure.
how you landed on it. Part of what I find impressive about it is maybe my low expectations for what I actually thought Guerrilla Games was going to pull off.
Sure.
Given it was their first time jumping into an open world, that's not exactly an easy thing to do.
No.
And I think the parts of the game I'm disappointed with are because they were scratching at something even
yeah.
grander. It's more about missed potential than actually, like, y'all did this wrong.
So close.
Like, you didn't pull it off. You weren't capable of pulling it off. It's more that, like, a lot of what they did, had they taken it a little bit further or adjusted it by a few degrees, I think it could have been... Like, there's a great foundation here for... I mean, I hate saying this for games to just come out. It's like, it's a great foundation for a sequel, but, like... There is a lot of this that, like, if you took all this, then changed a little bit of that, and added some of this, like they really had. So in terms of biting off something very big, I think what they managed to chew was actually pretty impressive. To use like a really shitty metaphor.
Totally. I mean, like, that's the thing for me is that there are lots of things that I think I'm really high on in that game. I think that the world, like, the cultures in that world are really interesting, and I wish we'd gotten more of those things, because the taste of all of the different, you know, civilizations are really cool. I do think that there's probably a conversation worth having about, like, native appropriation, and I'm really excited for people to tackle that stuff.
Especially once you know... I'm not saying, like, the story of the game changes that, but there is a context to the story of Horizon that, I guess, maybe creates some shades of gray for how you interpret the world of Horizon.
But none of it really, for both ways that make that clearer and less clear why they chose the way they went. Like, I can tell you why the racial breakdown of that game is the way it is in the fiction. But I can't quite tell you why, like, the first tribe that you meet is, like, a weird amalgamation of Native American, like, tribal, vague caricature, you know, like, which is not frustrating. It's like, the thing that game does really well in its story, in its storytelling, is that it understands that material things in history can impact the way cultures develop, right?
Yeah.
That, like, being near a certain set of minerals can allow a culture to develop in such a way because they have access to those resources.
The tribe that you're associated with, the Nora, like the fact that they are, we're specifically next to this thing called the All Mother, which is related to a lot of other things.
This giant
mountain with machinery inside, like, is directly responsible for like the matriarchy, the religious beliefs that this society has, like, and all that stuff works really well and is really interesting. There are some elements that I don't think they commit to enough on that I think could have alleviated some of the concerns people have about some of the other stuff you're talking about.
Yeah, totally. But so for me, they did that stuff really well, and then also didn't manage the stuff that they did really well was, like, these cultures are interesting in and of themselves, right? Like, all the different major factions, though, like, some of them barely exist or, like, show up briefly, and I want to see more about them. But then, like, there are things in that game that are just, like, every merchant sells the same stuff after, like, hour 10, right? Like, every merchant, minus, like, five special merchants who sell their one thing.
They do the collectible stuff,
They do the collectible stuff, right? And they all give you, like, it almost makes no sense that, like, the merchant at the merchant at the big city would sell you the equipment that the evil faction, the bad guys, use throughout the entire game. That's the best top-level stuff. But, like, and I'm not just like, okay, that's, there's not enough stuff. It's that that's a vector of storytelling also, right? Like, when I go into a village in The Witcher and a dude has, like, oh, this is the one cool sword he's had for generations, and I can buy it from him, or I can do a quest to get it from him. That tells me something about him and that story or in that setting. Or if I go to a different village where it's like, this guy's supposed to be a food merchant, but all he sells is, like, food and, like, a little bit of food and then a lot of Gwent cards. It's like, okay, I see right through you. Like, you were just a Gwent addict, man. Like,
Or even just, like, the way Witcher, you know, like, certain merchants are clearly rich, and so you can sell more things to them.
Totally.
And certain merchants are poor, and so you're not going to be able to offload your expensive armor on them to, you know, that's, like, it's little things like that that tell stories about the merchants and the world that they're contextualized in, the city that they're in, that Horizon doesn't. I think what they did was to be the most expedient thing for the gameplay, which is, like, look, anything you want is going to be at every merchant you find. And, like, I think there's clearly an argument to be made for why that is better from a gameplay perspective. But then there's a way to, like, have just generic tile of stuff that every merchant will have, and then find ways to shade that with things that are specific to those merchants that reflect their society and their culture. Because the game really does go out of its way to, like, the culture of its world is extremely important to it. Like, it is something they thought deeply about. And I think that's when I talk about, like, the missed potential, is, like, the opportunity for that additional layers of storytelling and ways of telling those stories. Because this game, I think the thing that bothered me the most about it is its exposition dumps, or exposition caves, as I would call them. I mean, there are literally sequences in this game where you will be dropped into a room and there'll be six little voice things that you
my
can
dude,
listen to.
My dude, it's the first experience of the game.
It is.
The game opens... It's like if Bio... This is... I was talking to my friend Jack DeKeet about this, who writes for us as a columnist every week or every other week. And he said, like, what if Bioshock opened up by you get 7 audio logs? And, like... That's what that's what this game does, and then every exposition dump is that again, and the stuff
like there's every like there are specific moments in the game where it's like it's exposition time, like it is just clear you're going into literally a cave every time that are to exposition caves, and you're going to find logs,
yep,
other stuff. Yep. I'm trying to be vague because the game is still not out yet, but it's and what frustrates me about it is because the stories that are being told I think are really interesting, yeah, and like the. What they're telling about the larger fiction of Horizon is, I found, like, if I was to tell it to you, you'd go, holy shit, that's, like, really fascinating and complicated. Yeah. And it is, but, like, in the moment when I've spent literally 25 minutes in the same room just moving my cursor to the next audio log, and the reason yes, you can walk around while you listen to an audio log, but if you happen to walk to, like, the next room and then, like, your character starts talking or is talking to another character, that dialogue will layer on top of the audio log that you're listening to. So instead, you are stuck in these caves listening to fascinating exposition, but also wondering, Lord, there has to be a better way to do this.
There has to be. There's got to be a better way. I think the things that we're talking about are, for me, emblematic of my beef with Horizon in general. I think there are things I really like about Horizon. And if you want to hear like my full breakdown or read my full breakdown, we each have a take basically on the site, right? We each basically wrote a letter to each other saying, here's what works for me and here's what didn't. So you can definitely check those out. But for me, like, that's the thing that ended up feeling... The thing that I left Horizon feeling was like, this game is... And I use this analogy for you with you earlier this week, is very digital in the sense that like it is designed so that your play experience is a set of discrete moments where like climbing the walls means you climb on the specific points in the walls. Getting exposition means you're in a discrete exposition zone. Even fighting enemies, which should feel big and organic, and like the thing that I really wanted from that was enemies attacking other enemies and to fight with a weird robot dinosaur to fall into a fight with some enemy, like some humanoid enemies, and like the sort of Far Cry thing of just like weird organic, like almost like a blanket of activity that's like being slapped around.
It's incredibly rare that you actually find the world systemically interacting with one another.
Exactly.
Like the only times that in the whatever 20, 25 hours that I played through the game that I found moments where you got that, where it's like it felt... organic were yes. clearly structured events where they were scripting, not explicitly scripting, but they had, you were meant to stumble upon something that gave the illusion yes. of a world that was organically interacting with one another, when in actually what they've set up are very discrete zones with discrete creatures, and the only time that those are ever going to cross paths are
scripted
when the
moments.
Game has scripted that yeah. or made it an event.
Well, like once in a blue, like I think maybe once in all of my 31 hours of playing it, did I happen to see some humanoid enemies like hunting, or humanoid, it was just NPCs hunting yeah. A gazelle or something. And it's like, y'all have cities. You should be doing stuff in this environment. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean,
there was
yeah, and it like, so it becomes where these moments where it does happen are really cool, and you wish there were more of them. Like, there was an instance in which I was fighting, some of these sort of end game-ish enemies, which you can find just randomly in the yep. environment or in their zones, are enormous. Like, they're massive. And I stumbled upon one, and the one was already a problem enough for me, and then a second one appeared, and I was like, well, I'm not going to be able to pull this off. And I'm sitting there just behind a tree, just outside of like where they could kind of like make it over to me. It was one of these creatures that kind of goes in and outside yeah, yeah, of yep. the ground. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool and interesting kind of fight. So I was just kind of just being a dick and just picking them off from a distance. And then a set of soldiers just happened to be walking by and joined right. in. And
That's
they
awesome.
Proved the distraction that allowed me to start like, picking specific arrow types to like taking
like,
off like yeah. chunks of this armor and like really start. And I was like, we were able to eventually tear down these creatures and win the fight. And I was like, man, like this is awesome. Like this
Do
is what
this
I wanted
more.
Way
yes.
more of. Where, and I think it speaks to this idea of missed potential, where it's like, I really like Horizon. There's a lot of things I like about it. It's a, mm-hmm. it's a game that I think a lot of people should play. And
right.
I think a lot of people are going to enjoy, but it's also frustrating to see it like, just like walk up to a wall and just like not get to the other side of that door when it's like, gosh, there is so much potential in what you've set up and you just didn't quite get all the way there.
I think you're being literal because there are lots of times where it's like, I could hop over this. Aloy is like a super like navigator. She could do whatever she wants. She can't hop over this little curb for real game. So this is one of those situations where I'm glad I don't have to give a game a score for completely cowardly reasons, which is like, I think this is super middle of the road for me, but I also think that lots of people are going to have a great time with it.
Because yeah, like I really did have a great time with it. For me as a critic, yeah.
Is that like I think the majority of people are going to play that game and like love not every moment of it, but a lot of it. But I just like rainwater while wearing a, like a fucking treated thing, like just right off of me, just like nothing. And there's no impact there the way I wanted to, outside of a few key story things and some story ideas, and I think a couple of really big moments. There's a moment at the end of the game that is definitely going to be like moment of the year for me or near it, depending on how you deal with a certain character. And it's just like, oh, that was fucking choice, because Aloy is dope. I think Aloy is like a pretty dope character, as in the main plot anyway. I think the side stuff not so great. Anyway, let me get back to the analogy I was trying to make.
Yeah.
The analogy is that I was saying that Horizon Zero Dawn, which we just talked about, is very digital, because I've now put a dozen hours or so, maybe 15, into Zelda Breath of the Wild, which I think is very analog. And this is a weak analogy, like this is not going to hold up completely, but like, think about the difference between those two games. Is in Horizon, you have to look at something that's yellow to climb it. You have to find something in the environment that's been scripted to be climbable, and often there is a 5-minute sequence of you climbing something. In Zelda, you can climb basically anything, and it just has a stamina meter. And it's about finding your own route on that cliff face that lets you successfully climb. And obviously there's still like, oh, this is a place where you can do a handhold, or this is a place where you, or not a handhold, this is a place where you can like rest and recover your stamina or whatever. Like, I'm not saying that it's do whatever you want. That's not what any game is ever. But that feeling of like, I bet I could do this, and then doing it, is how Zelda Breath of the Wild has felt for me. It's been every impulse of exploration has been rewarded with something like a treasure chest or a little puzzle or a beautiful vista or a weapon or a fight. Like, anytime I go, I wonder if I can do X, I do it, and then something cool happens. And that is, like, it's scratching all of the itches right now. I'm going to do my best not to be, like, too glowing about this, because I'm still only 12 hours in.
And there's, like, and you basically can't talk about, like, any specifics about the game.
I'm not going to show this, but I'm going to just reread my embargo really quick.
Which is basically, okay, you can say you've played it and if you've enjoyed it, and that's about it.
Uh-huh. Can't say, okay. Oh, boy. Yeah, okay. Okay, well, I can still say a lot. So,
wait, let's step back. Let's step back a second. I want to ask you.
Ask me a question.
What is your thoughts on the Zelda series? Where are your highs? Where are your lows? Where do you end up at this game in the canon of Zelda?
Okay, so the last Zelda game I actually beat was probably Majora's Mask.
N64 or 3DS?
N64. Okay. I never picked it up on 3DS. I should. I like Majora's Mask a lot. Or you know what? I probably rebeat Ocarina since then once, like in college or something. I barely played Wind Waker. I didn't have a GameCube when it came out. Mm-hmm. And I have it on Wii U, but just never found the time to sit down and play Wind Waker again. Yep. I think it's gorgeous and really love all the time I've put into it, but just never finished it. I bounced right off of Twilight Princess when it came out.
Yeah, and, as you should have, because that game has the most atrocious intro to every any Zelda game ever made.
It's really fucking bad. It's really bad. And I would have rather, there was like so many other things that I wanted to play on the Wii U or the Wii at the time.
Yeah.
Just because there was a novelty factor there. And I was like, I don't really want to play I don't want to play like a dark brooding Zelda game where I'm stuck as this fucking wolf. Like, it's just not what I want to do. Mm-mm. And then I didn't play Skyward Sword at all because I remember watching the quick look of it with you in it and being like, this game has a look, and I bet there's some cool stuff here, but like, you are also telling me that the end game is miserable, and I'm just not going to put that many hours into this thing.
Yeah, Skyward Sword was a really good 15 to 20 hour game wrapped in a 30 to 35 hour game that just,
I'm trying to think if there's any other Zelda games that I have played since then. I don't think I ever played Phantom Hourglass, which I hear was great.
I didn't play any of the Spirit DS. Tracks. ones. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't even play Link Between Worlds, which is the one I most wanted to play because I hear it's fantastic.
Good game. A little overrated, but good game.
Okay. Well, so that's where my like my heart is probably with. It's probably Ocarina, but like Majora's Mask is really fucking good. It's
cool. Yeah, it is. It's the Zelda game.
But so that's like my Zelda setup. I will also say that like I am interested in it as a franchise because we don't have many franchises in the world of games that have such a deep canon of mechanics that move from game to game and from platform to platform, right? That like the say what you will about Skyward Sword, but like you can draw a direct mechanical line from The Legend of Zelda to it and like, okay, here's how they're still redoing those same mechanics. And that's interesting to me conceptually. I think this is really high for me. I haven't beaten it, but it is. So when I played Zelda Ocarina of Time, that was like the end of me liking platformers, which is a weird thing to say because it's not a platformer. But I'd played Mario 64 and I enjoyed Mario 64. I was like, oh yeah, cool. And then I played Ocarina of Time and I was like, oh, I'm never playing a game that isn't about adventure and like fighting things. And why would I ever do it? And this is Breath of the Wild has a very similar effect in that it feels like I'm being rewarded in ways that other games, it's just like a thing I do because it's my own enjoyment. Like in Far Cry 2, if I climb a thing and find, you know, a mountain and then get into a gunfight, like I'm doing it because I really love it. But here the world has been created such that like doing those things is built to be, is also in the game going to reward me with something really cool. Even if it's just like a cool sword I can use for the next hour or whatever. And that is like a huge difference for what I've found from most open world games. Like it feels like a third way for open world games. Like if there's like The Witcher style, you know, story heavy, every handwritten dialogue from every cat for every character that's voiced. And then there's like the Ubisoft huge collectible model. And then there's like the BioWare also kind of story heavy dialogue focused thing. This feels like this other thing where like it is bringing in elements from exploration games in a way that I really enjoy, but that I hadn't seen in this sort of open world space outside of like, you know, like it's like very Minecrafty in that sense of just like, I really want to know what's over the next hill or something like that. You know, like I really want to see more shit. I want to get stuff.
This is like a super basic question. I have not, I've seen very little of the game. I think, you know, I've not played it before. But I think one of the things that I never got a sense of in people's write ups in the past or the footage I saw, like, can you talk at all about like the structure of how this, because I think that like, that it's like, yeah, okay, it's an open world. But it's like, all right, like, what is that? Like, what am I doing?
So, like, playing this game and playing Horizon back to back have, like, reminded me or have made me realize, and I kind of started talking about this on Twitter the other day, that we should stop talking about open world as a genre. Like, I really start. So, when I was playing Horizon, I had this feeling early on. I was like, oh no, I think I have it. I have the open world fatigue everyone always tells me about. And I'm the open world guy. I'm the guy who, whenever anybody says, I have open world fatigue, I go, I don't. Like, fucking feed me more. And in retrospect, playing these two games back to back have made me realize that maybe what we need to do when we say we have open world fatigue is zoom in a little bit and say the maybe harder thing, which is this game isn't good or this game is doing open worlds poorly. It's not like saying I have RPG fatigue. It's like saying like most of the time it's like, oh, the itemization is bad or the UI is bad or the pacing is wrong. Like if we can zoom in a little bit closer, there's a specific problem. Because I went from Horizon, this game that made me think I had open world fatigue, to Breath of the Wild, which has a completely different structure in that it is, or maybe it's not even a completely different structure. That's the thing. It's like it's a similar enough structure, but that it executes on it in a way that I just want to play it right now. Like it's all I want to do is shut up, Patrick. I'm gonna go play Breath of the Wild. Structure is that
it seems like a little bit of like Horizon is very much everything is being marked on a map and then you're headed towards a waypoint and you're not really going to discover very much along the way. It's more about like kind of, I mean you can, but it seems like
not really.
Not really. And it seems like Breath of the Wild, at least from what you're saying, is very much more, you're going to get a lot of, you're going to be distracted along the way.
Here's how the game opens up. The game opens up, which was seen in E3 and at the Switch presser, and again and again and again, those first like 20 minutes on the Hyrule, the Great Plateau of Hyrule. You come out of this cave, you're resurrected, you're in the resurrection shrine, you come out, you go out, you see this huge open world, you take a few steps, you hear a voice that says, hey, come help, save me. It's help me, Link.
Good motivation.
And you meet this dude who's like, oh, word, like, too bad you can't go help anybody because you're stuck on this plateau and there's no way down safely for you, but I'll hook you up with this paraglider which is like this hang glider that you can just pop out whenever you want, Just Cause style, if you go and complete these four shrines. And so that's like the opening thing. It's just like you're in this little mini open world at the top of this plateau, and you can go do these four shrines, and once you do those four shrines, then you can come back and I'll give you the paraglider, which then opens the world up to you, basically. And that's the structure in another sort of way, too, in that on your way to go get the shrines, like, oh, maybe you'll find a camp of bokoblins, and if you defeat them, a chest will open up for you to go get a cool reward, or maybe you'll find, and this is like one of my favorite things, I'm going to invent a puzzle for you really quick, just so that I'm not giving the solution to a real one.
Sure, yeah.
Let's say that you come across a space that has, like, six rocks, or has, like, six, like, spots, and it's, like, rock, 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 space, rock. And then across from it, there are six flowers. You won't just, like, see that in the world at some point. And you're like, wait a second, and you go over and you pull the fifth flower out that matches with the fifth rock, and it goes like do-do-do-do-do, and then you get a thing. And the world is filled with puzzles like that. It's one of the things that whenever you're like, I wonder if I could climb up there, that looks like a cool spot, you go and do that. And then it has like an environmental puzzle from The Witness, basically, right? It's just like, were you paying attention? It's again and again and again. It's one of my favorite things about the game is just like, it encourages you to look at the environment around you, and the environment is gorgeous. So, like, I'm just constantly looking for something to be off a little bit, or to look handmade, or look for a place where I can throw a rock or light a torch or whatever. And those are everywhere. So that's really cool. Fight some enemies, solve a puzzle that's in the world, collect some ore. There's stuff scattered in between those four shrines. And so you end up going off and doing those side things. And then you go to the shrine and you do the shrine, and guess what? I don't know how we didn't fucking figure this shit out. Like, Nintendo, everyone was like, including me, like, I don't know about these shrines. What I like is dungeons, because that's what we've been trained to like.
Right.
Except that, like, when you stop thinking about it in terms of just Zelda, and you realize what the shrines are, which is, there's some that are, like, combat-focused, but most of them are physics-driven puzzles that let you use the abilities that they've already shown off. Things like bombs, and the stasis thing, and the magnet thing. And you use those to solve puzzles. They're all physics driven. And it's like someone told Nintendo they were allowed to make Portal levels. And it's great. Like, every one of those so far has been something that I go like, aha, I get you. I flip this upside down. Clever, right? And of course Nintendo can make really good little puzzle rooms. Like, they're exactly that sort of design house.
Go play Box Boy. Right, lots of puzzle
Box
rooms
Boy.
And Box
go
Boy.
Go play Captain Toad. They make good puzzle games.
Yeah, where's Captain Toad 2? Come on.
It's here. It's in Breath of the Wild. It's the shrines.
that's true. And then, all right, like, Mario Odyssey, you are no longer game of the year. Captain
but that's
Toad
what I
2.
Mean. So, like, that's those are the sorts of things that are at the shrines. And then there are big story things, which I can't get into in any way, that I'm pretty interested in. I'm pretty interested in how they're unfolding the story. I'm curious.
Are you? Because obviously you can't say, but like,
I can't say anything about it. I'm very curious to see how it will be received. They talked to Game Informer. Aonuma.
He claims there's a trick.
There's a trick.
Are you aware of the trick?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a pretty obvious trick.
Okay. All right.
They make the trick very obvious. The trick is attached to something that's really cool that I can't talk about yet.
Okay.
Which sucks. But like, there's another.
You're
thing
sent
that's
to
really
the world
cool.
from Majora's Mask, and then it's actually secretly
yep,
Breath of the Wild.
It's
Majora's
that's
Mask too.
That's it. So
I knew it.
I don't know. So, like, I'm going to throw another comparison out. So, yeah. Far Cry 2, I already compared it to.
You can only use Far Cry 2 once per podcast episode. Once you've used the comparison to Far Cry 2, you've got to find something else.
Far Cry 4. So it's like Far Cry 4 in this way. I sent you a video yesterday, Patrick, where I was like, dude, you have to fucking see. This is, I said, what did I say? I said, like, if you want to know what type of game Zelda Breath of the Wild is, it's this. And this is in my, one of my favorite things I've done so far is I was low on health and like didn't have any healing items. And there was an, I was trying to get across this thing that was like next to a river. There's a river running. And I was trying to walk down the side of it to get to a location. And the, in front of me was a bokoblin camp that included a blue bokoblin, which in the early game is one of the hardest enemies that you can fight. And enemies are actually tough in this. Like the combat's actually, like I get killed pretty often, like compared to Horizon, where I think I died 3 or 4 times in the whole game. I'll die 3 times.
Yeah, Zelda games are not usually about dying in the last 15 years.
There's really great checkpointing. Like they'll just checkpoint you as soon, like right outside the camp that you're at.
Right.
Which is great.
But you still have to be careful about combat.
Totally, because enemies don't do the Batman thing of just like, all right, we're going to take turns at fighting you. They're like, no, we're going to kill you. Is the thing we're going to fucking do? Actually, so like, you better keep your distance, or you better have a weapon that's long to keep us at range, or you better, like, that stuff all feels good. But so in this case, I was like, I don't want to fucking fight these guys. Like, they're going to kill me. And I realized I was standing next to a big metal rock. And so I grabbed the rock with my magnet thing, and I lifted it way up in the air and, like, walked over behind a little hillock and like held it over them. I was like, it's just not the right angle. So I moved, I realized, oh, there's a little up to my left, there's a little ridge on the side of the cliff. I'll put the rock up there. And I did that. And I climbed up the rock or up the side of the cliff onto that little like ridge, picked up the big rock again with my magnet powers, walked over and then just like fucking dropped it right on this explosive barrel that was at the back of their camp. And the whole thing exploded. And it was like, I'm the best Zelda ever. It's me. Me, Link, the best Zelda ever. And that's, like, that sort of...
A lot of tiny, sort of, like, story, like, person... Like,
yes.
Most Zelda games are not about the story you tell on your adventure. It's the story that is being told to you and the adventure you're being prescripted on.
Exactly.
And it sounds like, you know... If anything, like, especially the type of open-world games you seem to be attracted to, it's where it's, like, the story, the quote-unquote... Plot is you know, maybe it's good, maybe it's not good. It's sort of irrelevant.
There's stuff I want to talk to you about the plot so bad.
But that the player story are like different things. And it sounds like in previous Zelda games there was not much of a player story. And it seems like in Breath of the Wild, like the promise of open world, if we take that as like a general conceit, is the opportunity for player stories, which like I think Horizon Zero Dawn doesn't do a very good job of allowing for player stories. Doesn't make it a bad game. It's just if you're looking for that out of your open world,
you're just not going to get it.
That's just not what it's going for. Whereas Breath of the Wild seems like it's into it.
Even the coolest fights in Horizon Breath of the Wild, or Horizon Breath of the Wild, Horizon Zero Dawn. I wish Horizon was more like Zelda. Like, I really do. But the coolest fights for Horizon for me were the big super enemies that you described earlier, because they did push me to, like, make sure I used all my traps and stuff like that. But even then, they mostly came down to the same thing, which is like, I'm going to use the tear arrows to tear off their armor or to tear off components. I'm going to pick up one of those components and shoot it back at them.
Some of my favorite, there are these... I don't know. I'm not getting into what they are, but they're like sort of like these, like sort of one-off dungeons that in Horizon, in which when you complete them, it expands your ability to take control of the different beasts. And at the end of each of those dungeons is there is always a sort of like high-level creature that is captured inside of a bubble, and then you have to interact with a node that unleashes them. But you trigger the beginning of the fight. And they were some of my favorite fights in the game because you almost were assuredly going to fight something that was a little more difficult than what you were used to. And you had a moment to sort of think about what you wanted to do in the fight. And those are the fights where I would get creative.
Yeah.
I would break out of the mold of how I was playing, where I would set up those traps that you're... there are traps that you can lay down that are like fire and shock and some that are just bombs that explode. There are other traps where you are... shooting these arrows into the ground, and then it creates sort of like a fire barrier or a shock barrier. And what I would do in those sequences was, the creature is trapped in the center, and then there are these little barriers that you can hide around, but there are gaps in between those barriers. And so before the fight would start, I would set up, these shock traps, like, in each of those sections. And I got to be creative in fighting in a way that the game didn't necessarily always encourage moment to moment. And I found those to be really exhilarating because... I had an opportunity to breathe and try something different, whereas The combat in Horizon doesn't necessarily push you to be creative, which doesn't mean right. that you can't be creative, right? Like, there'll be people that are going to play this game and go, "What are you talking about? Totally. I approached every fight totally differently."
And I commend them for making a game that isn't another cover shooter. Like, I think that Guerrilla did a good job of being like, "Okay, we're not going to make a first-person shooter. We're not going to make a cover shooter. We need there to be a new, interesting way for players to express themselves in combat." And they looked towards things like Monster Hunter to help them do that. And I think that mostly works. I just wish there was more variety in how you needed to be.
That's the thing. Like, I know how I play games, which is that I will become habitual. Yep. And I appreciate when games force me out of my comfort zone through the design. And so what Horizon doesn't do, Horizon gives you lots of options on how to approach combat. Like, it is not lacking in approaches to combat. It is lacking in forcing you to change your approach to meet the situation. Like, there are precious few situations where you have, like, where they're going to say, you can no longer do that thing right. that you've been doing for 10 hours. You're going to have to figure out a different way to do it. And most of the time, you can just do that thing you've done for 10 hours. And the only reason you're not going to do that is because maybe you're bored of it. Maybe you want to try something different. And I appreciate when games say, we are going to force you to do right. something different.
So that was, like, my problem with, I'm also an outlier in that I'm not a big fan of Red Faction Guerrilla, which I think has, again, I was like, man, this is a great foundation. I love how you can tear everything apart. But in that game, by the end, it was just, I used the arc cannon to take over a tank every time because it was easy and repeatable. And the other stuff was rewarding, but not that rewarding for me. And again, I know I'm an outlier on that game. I know people fucking love Red Faction Guerrilla, and I defend your right to love it. But there's one solution is push me to do better and to do different things. Red Faction Guerrilla did that with its trials. Horizon does that too. It's like, okay, now you have to use these tools. In Red Faction Guerrilla, it was like, you have to use a sledgehammer to take down this building. You can't use the gun that just disintegrates things. You can't use any bombs, or you can only use 12 sticky bombs to take down these three buildings. In Horizon, it's like, okay, you have to use the traps to get 12 of the weird antelope.
There's one of the trials where it's like, oh, like there's a group of enemies that are in an area, and you have to use your arrows to destroy environmental traps to get these rocks to fall on them. You totally. never at any point do anything remotely similar to that in the main game. It's not because we chose not to. It's because they don't, as far as I know, maybe I could be proven wrong, they don't exist in the main game. And actually, those trials ended up being kind of frustrating because you'd see, wow, there's so much more they can explore with these mechanics that just didn't make it into the world itself, and instead are confined to these little challenges that are really cool, but also end up kind of spoiling you for what you actually are asked or capable of doing in the main game.
Right, totally. So one solution is push me there. The other, and give me excuses to be as hard, to be like as creative as I can be difficult, be challenging, be surprising. The other solution is makes expressivity and variation in my combat or in my whatever my core mechanic is be so fun that I want to fucking do it anyway.
Right.
And that's where the Far Cry series, Mafia 3, Dragon's Dogma, all of those games that I love are like not that different in that there is an optimal way forward. Of course there is. But they succeed because they make fucking around so fun that I'd rather fuck around than be optimal. Or Hitman, exactly like that. Or even like an MMO that makes it so that I think I'd rather wear worse armor because it looks cooler, right? Like,
right.
That's what that is. That falls into the same gap for me. It's like anytime that a game is convincing me not to play optimally because of X, Y, or Z, that's a good game for me. That's a game that fits.
I do that in Dark Souls all the time. Once I found the armor that makes me feel like I look like a weirdo, and I'm embracing it. It's like, okay, that's just the armor. I realize I can get stuff that will definitely help me in this boss battle, but I do not give a shit because I'm sticking with whatever I look like.
This robe looks ridiculous. I love it. Exactly. Totally like that. Or Dark Souls is the same way with weapons, right? Where it's like, yeah, I know I can read the guides. I can see that this sword is not the best sword in the game.
What's the sword from Dark Souls 1 that you could exploit? For like
the Drake sword.
The Drake sword.
Yeah, but I'm not gonna fuck around. It's not fun.
The game's not fun with the Drake sword.
or the other thing of just like, I got this Iron Knight sword. I love it. I love it. I know it. It's mine. I've been using it. I want this to be the weapon I kill the last boss with. Of course, I also have the Honor Orlando Great Spear or whatever the fuck. You know, like
I did that when I played Dark Souls 1, where I had the hand axe from the beginning of the game.
Right.
That you can. I just refused to give it up. People were like, dude, you have like way better weapons. And I was like, nah, this hand axe has been with me since day one. I eventually got off it like 3/4 of the game, but I stuck with it for like 20-25 hours because I was just like, this hand axe has seen some shit.
Right. I'm not going to give, in what world would you give that up? Like, until Dark Souls gets home crafting and I can craft a mantle to place the glorious
If I had a shelter, I could give that hand axe a home.
Retire it. Yeah, if I could retire
this hand axe killed ONS. Right. It's fine. We can put the hand axe away.
Killing ONS with a hand axe should level it up innately. It should gain their power.
I wonder if Breath of the Wild, does that push you in that direction to improvise? And also, not only because of the environmental and sort of like world design, but also because, from what I've read, from what you said, you're constantly, you don't have permanent equipment yet, especially when it comes to the weapon side. You're constantly sort of cycling through like shitty swords, basically, for and
armor,
other things.
Pants, shirts, and like head pieces, I think, are permanent. Those don't seem to take damage and break because you would die before that. I don't know. Like, you don't lose a shirt.
But you can take it off.
You do take it off. You can take it off. And you get
apparently, the characters will. I saw a tweet go around that said Nintendo is finally horny, which, if you played Fire Emblem, then Nintendo already was. But I guess the characters will remark on the fact that you have your shirt taken off and ask you to please put it back on.
I'm only allowed to talk about the first 5 hours of my play, and I think this falls within it. All I'm going to say is Lonely Archer Girl. That's all I want to say.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That's all I want to say.
Okay.
Tweets coming next week or the week after. We'll talk about it in the future.
Okay, yeah. We got some time. We got lots of time to talk about Zelda in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, it's true. I'm going to need a lot because it's a big game, apparently. Like, it's a huge world. I've put, again, 12 to 15 hours into it.
You can sprint to the final dungeon from the beginning, apparently.
I really want to see what that looks like. I'm curious to see about speedruns.
Someone will do that, of course, in the first day.
On day one, yeah. Thirst of the Wild says Jean-Paul Blart. Very good. Thirst of the Wild. Right.
Well, thank you for naming the episode title for this week. Thirst of the Wild is what we're going with. How often are you losing your weapons then? Like, how does that change the dynamics of combat?
So there are, the thing that's really cool for me is, so you get a range of weapons. This is for real.
Uh-huh. You're going to see what weapons you can talk about?
I literally am. All right. So in the early game, for instance, you know, I might have a tree branch or a traveler's sword, right? And the traveler's sword is like one of the first ones you get. And it's like pretty low damage and it breaks pretty easily. But you might find...
What does that mean, breaks pretty easy? Like a fight? Two fights? You're going to have an hour?
A couple fights. Not even... Okay. No, definitely not an hour. Like, combat feels... When you engage in combat, you're committing to something breaking in the early game. But you're also committing to, like, okay, I'm going to kill that Bokoblin and get its club, which is at least as good as my starter sword. Okay. And get its shield, which might be better than my starter shield. And in general, I always leave combat better equipped than I came into it. It's just that there's this dip in the middle where I'm worse equipped because I've broken a sword or a shield, at least, again, in the first few hours of the game. But then the other thing that happens is, like, let's say I've found a iron sledgehammer.
People can't, I wish, you know, people will listen to the podcast version of this, but I hope you know every time he kind of drifts off mic a little bit, he's referring to his stack, his embargo sheet to see which terms he's allowed to say.
Soldier's sword. Let's say I have a soldier's sword, which is going to be much better than the traveler's sword or one of the Bokoblin clubs.
Uh-huh.
I end up saving that. I end up doing the thing that, like, it hits the right zone for me in that, like, okay, I'm going to save this for, like, a real fight. That you don't do the JRPG thing that I always do, which is, like, I need 99 ethers just in case. I'm never going to use an ether. I'm never going to use a potion.
I got to the end of Resident Evil 7 with, like, a bajillion bullets. And right, I was like, well, should have used those bullets before.
Right. So the... I do save things, but you're going to be pushed to pull it out. You know what I mean? Like, there's a push come to shove. It's time to break out that soldier sword. It's time to break out that, like, extra big club or that sledgehammer, because you're fighting something that is pushing you that hard, because you're fighting a bigger enemy, or there's more of them than you thought there would be, or because in the middle of fighting enemy one, you push them too far and you bounce into another group of enemies and now they're all swarming you. Or you fucked up and you shot an arrow out at a thing and instead of hitting it, you hit a boar behind it that's now charging at you. I saw Bokoblins hunting boars the other day and it was like the coolest shit. And I was like, all right, yeah, I'm in. Like, give me that systemic interaction, baby. Like, let's go.
Does do the various weapon types that you encountered so far, like, meaningfully change, like, how you... I mean, like, again, not to bring everything back to Dark Souls, but, like, the difference between, like, a sword and an axe is, like, very different for how you approach combat. Like, how far does Breath of the Wild go down in terms of...
Yes, the weapon types definitely are differentiated, right? So, like, for instance, the sledgehammer is one of the things it does really well is it breaks up ore, so you can...
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Go and collect ore without having to use a bomb or without breaking another weapon. Axes cut down trees, but they also have just different weapon, like, move sets. So, like, axes or claymores, big... can. There's no claymores in this game. Yeah, I haven't seen any. Big weapons have, like, big swipes. Whereas there's, like, a sword and shield for other stuff. Even there is a boomerang that is a melee weapon, but you can use the thing, your trick, to throw it as if you're throwing a weapon. Like, normally when a weapon's about to break, the thing to do is throw it at somebody, because thrown weapons do double damage when they hit, and then they break. So, like, a boomerang, you can throw it as if it's a melee weapon you're throwing, and then it loops back around and you can catch it. And that's really fun and cool. So there are pretty distinct things on the weapons, on top of just stats. And then there are special weapons that you get from doing things in the environment, or for doing things in, like, for completing side quests, basically.
Things that are permanent, or just, like, more powerful temporary swords?
More powerful that I hold on to for hours until I'm fighting a really big thing.
So the kind of thing that you'll, like, save for a boss, like, all right, time to bring this bad boy out.
Totally.
Does weapon degradation carry over if you, like, let's say you're fighting some sort of large creature or a scrum of goblins, and you die, like, and if, like, what happens to your stuff when you die?
I think you checkpointed right before the fight, so you just go back to that checkpoint.
Okay.
I know that because I got into a trial combat dungeon. In which I was fighting a really hard enemy, and you keep all the stuff because I died a bunch of times trying to beat it. I was like, okay, well, here's what I have. And that's the other thing about this game is it does scratch. You know, I always wanted to get into the Monster Hunter series, and up until Witcher 3, I'd always wanted to get into Witcher because I love the notion of preparing for something.
Mm-hmm.
And this game makes that a core thing in that, one, you want to have your items on lock. You want to make sure you have enough arrows. You want to make sure you have the right weapons, the right armor on. And because of the way the environmental stuff factors into the game, things like it being cold being a real thing that affects you as you play.
Does that mean, like, cold makes, like, your stamina meter go down faster?
No, cold will you'll fucking freeze to death.
Okay. Yeah, that's worse.
It's worse. It's bad. And
I read in one of the write-ups, it was like, you know, yeah, you can climb any mountain, but then maybe all of a sudden, like, a rainstorm will come in.
Yep.
And if it rains while you're climbing the mountain, that means your stamina goes down faster.
And you'll slip from the thing. Or if there's a lightning storm, you'll get hit by lightning. If you're wearing metal armor, you better put that metal armor away or metal weapons away.
No, that's awesome.
It's fucking awesome.
That is a small-ass detail.
Exactly. And, like, they start sparking and the lightning, it's really good.
Huh.
Other things in the environment that are metal will get hit. I was climbing a mountain and saw, like, an old rusted sword on the side of the mountain. And the lightning was, like, struck it 3 feet away from me. And it was amazing. Like, it was really good. Like, moments like that are fucking really cool. And so, like, to prep for it, one, you want to make sure you have the right equipment on. You want to make sure you have, like, the double knit sweater that is, like, a little tighter on you, or the another piece of equipment that might help you do a thing you think you might need to do, swim or climb or whatever. There might be equipment that helps you do things like that in the game. And those are things that don't break. You know, like, you know, if you have on your warm doublet, like, that's the thing that's going to make you warm. But even that might not be enough if you're climbing a really tall mountain where it's really cold and snowy up top. And so that's when you have to start doing the cooking, which, is, again, is stuff that has been seen in preview events, that there's cooking in this game. But it's really, I really enjoy the cooking because of the way it works.
I was going to say, because, like, key to any games that start to incorporate a lot of these elements where you're collecting a lot of things, you're mining a lot of things, there's survival elements. Like, if the interface does not make it easy to interact with that stuff,
it could be easier.
Okay.
It could be easier. One, there are things, I wish I could drop a shield without going into my inventory. You can change equipment, you can change melee ranged and shield weapons and arrow types without going into a menu. You can't change, like, clothing, but you don't change it that often, and you can't drop a shield or drop a bow. And the reason you do that is because your shield, melee weapon, ranged weapon slots are limited. You can expand them in the game, depending on some side stuff. But your basic, like, those weapons, there's a limit to them. There's a limit to how many clothes you can wear, how many clothes armor pieces you can hold. I think there is, anyway.
Do you have, like, an item box where they go, or you're always just, like...
You're just, this is it. You're capped out. So I think it's just the stuff that's disposable, the weapons, basically.
Gotcha.
The weapons and shields. And so there are times when I'm like, I just want to drop this almost broken shield and pick up this new one. I have to go into a menu for that. So that's annoying. But resources, so far I've not hit a limit cap on resources, and I have, like, 3 pages of resources at this point. That's materials, things that you pick up from, like, bokoblin horns or flowers or
the
meat.
The rupee caps in previous Zelda games, which drive me up. I don't need to go buy a bigger bag for rupees, you stupid game.
I know. So the way cooking works in this is, like, it's modular. So, like, let's say you have... There's no list of meat, I don't think, or of cooking things. Thank God. I can just say whatever the fuck I want.
Do you only heal through... Like, are you still, like, slashing a brush in order to find hearts? Like, none of that's in the game?
No. If you slash brush, you might find a critter, like a frog or a grasshopper.
But you're not, like, grinding for rupees and hearts and brush anymore.
I'm pretty rich in this game. Because, like... You go mine for ore, and you might get, like, a sapphire, and then you can sell that for a bunch of money to somebody.
Okay.
There are a lot. There's, like, I don't want to talk about the NPCs in this game.
Right.
Because, so I killed that guy with the big stone. I killed that whole camp with that big stone that hit the explosive barrel, and it was raining, and I walked alongside this river. And then for the first time, I saw other people in this game, and it was just, like, warm and good, and, like, it's another, like, not to keep dumping on Horizon in this way, but, like, I never saw people in Horizon and got excited about it. Outside of when I got to the big central hub of that game, because it was cool looking. But every time I find my way to a new encampment or pass someone on a pathway in Breath of the Wild, I'm like, oh, word? Like, what's up with you? How's your day going? Like, let's just walk for a while. Like, let's sit by the fire. Like, tell me your little thing about how this old fort used to be this thing or that thing. And, like... There is something about the aesthetic of this game, the character descriptor, the character designs, the expressivity on their faces, and the music especially. That's just like, oh man, this horse stable is where it is at. Like, I just want to hang out here all day. Like, I just want to be near this place. I want to go, and then that helps it when you go do the busy work of, like, all right, let's go make some food. Like, this cool music is playing. There's a dog over there. I'm gonna go cook some food.
There are dogs in this game.
There are dogs. You can feed dogs in this game. I fed a dog an apple, and it followed me around for a while.
What?
Yeah, it's great. Like, that stuff is really, like, again, it's a warm game. It's the game that feels like it's so obvious that there is Studio Ghibli love letter in this game. That's like, that's the sort of an experience and warmth that it wants to have, and also the sort of terror of, like, huge machines coming at you through the woods or whatever. That hasn't happened to me yet, but I know it's coming because I've been shot at by, like, broken down versions of those temple guards.
Oh, wow, huh.
And, like, I'm terror, like, that's gonna happen at some point, and it's gonna be scary. Just to briefly talk about that cooking again, like, it's modular in the sense that, like, let's say you have a piece of raw meat. You could eat it for, like, half a heart, which you shouldn't do because that's how you get sick. Don't do it. Not for in real life, not in Zelda.
I was going to say, the survival elements of Breath of the Wild are pretty basic.
Right. So, or you could cook it, and when you cook it, it might go from half a heart to a full heart. Awesome. Or you could cook it with a spicy pepper. And if you do that, you get, like, spicy grilled steak. And that means that you'll be cold resistant for X amount of time. And the more spicy peppers you put in, the more resistance to cold you'll have, or the longer your resistance to cold will be. Or you could add some salt to it too, and then it'll be like spicy salted grilled steak, and that will be a little healthier for you. You'll get some more hearts from it. And so suddenly you're like, okay, what I really need is something that gives me all of my health back at once, and that gives me some armor hearts, some, like, Binding of Isaac
style.
Oh, the
silver ones, yeah.
Yeah, they're yellow in this, that are just like... yeah, these will go, these are temporary
hearts. Yeah.
So I'll cook that with, like, a special herb, and it ends up being a really fun way to like build exactly what you need before you go off into the world. I'm never stuck in that position where like, oh man, I fucking really need some anti-cold hearts or anti-cold stuff. I just,
right.
If I collect stuff as I see it, because collecting stuff is pretty quick, I just have what I need when I get back to a camp or whatever, where I'm like, okay, I'll do some cooking now. That said, there are ways that you can find what you need based on like knowing where stuff is in the world. And there's some other stuff that I can't talk about yet that will help you. Like if you're ever like, oh man, I really need something to get me warm so I can go up this big mountain, there are eventually ways for you to like know where that stuff is.
Is the recipe something you're purchasing, like experiment? No, like how exactly do you...
experimentation, but again, it's experimentation.
So you won't know, like you'll combine a pepper with a raw meat and you're not going to know at first what that does?
So the first like 3 hours, I was like, I don't know what the fuck's going to happen if I do this. But then you end up learning it the way you end up learning anything in the world, right? Like oh yeah, the spicy pepper is going to make something spicy. Like, if I mix it with an apple, I'll get spicy greens that might not give me a lot of health back, but will give me the warmth I need. And so you end up learning the kind of, like, system for making food, if that makes sense. You know,
but it's not like, hey, like, Link has discovered this, and then, like, then you have a recipe you can go back to.
It does make a sound that is, like... As you're cooking, it'll either make the sound of like a rock falling through glass like a do-do-doot, do-do-doot, do-do-doot. And then like, oh, it's new. It's a new recipe you got. Cool. I haven't found a recipe list, and I might just not know where that is because I vaguely remember someone being like, oh, once you know a recipe, X, Y, Z. But I've not found where that is yet.
Okay.
And I wish that the interface was a little bit easier for cooking. I wish I could just click on a pot and then be like, here's what I want to add. You have to go in your inventory and say, hold 4 things and then drop them in the pot. And it does the drop into the pot very cleanly. That you never like miss or anything like that. But when you just activate any campfire, it's like, oh, do you want to take a nap? Do you want to like hang out here until noon or midnight or something? So yeah, like there's a lot here to talk about and to get into. But I keep coming back to this feeling of wonder I have and the feeling of mystery, and like I constantly want to see what's behind the next ridge. I constantly want to know what is between me and the goal I'm walking towards. It never feels like. There are lots of open world games where once I have a quest, that is the thing I'm doing, and I don't want to fuck around with anything else. All I want to do in Zelda is fuck around, and not because the end thing is boring, because the side stuff feels that wondrous. And yeah, I don't know. Like I wish I could talk more about going to towns and meeting people and side objectives, and even the main story, which has some cool stuff going on in it, and the way it's delivered is interesting. But like, I'm pretty high on this game right now. Who knows? A week from now, I could be like, first 12 hours were really dope, but then those second 13 were bad or whatever.
Right, or it's super repetitive after the first 15 hours or something.
But there have been
like
moments where I have used liberal use of the screenshot, the share button on the Switch, where it was like, oh, take picture. I walked into this thing, I didn't know what it was, holy shit. And that's a good feeling for me, right? Like, I've always said the more screenshots of a game I take, the higher it must have placed in my heart. And that is, or the buggier it is. One or the other. And so far...
Yeah, both can be true.
Totally. This is totally, totally where I'm at with it right now.
Because we probably have to start getting towards wrapping up. But, like, briefly, like, how do you feel about the Switch, like, separate from Zelda? Have you had... left desync Joy-Con issue that lots of people have talked about?
For like 10... So for people who don't know, a site was like Game Explain on YouTube, I think, made this video that was like, hey, there's been talk about this, and here it is. The left Joy-Con will occasionally desync in such a way. Left Joy-Con. I just picked it up.
So this is when you're docking the Switch, you are just disconnecting the Joy-Cons, and you're playing it in TV mode.
You're playing it in TV mode, and you have it hooked into, you have these either one in each hand, which I think is actually kind of totally okay to play games, or in the little like controller holder thing. I forget what the official name is of that thing, but one of those two things. And then you, the thing that happens is like as you're using the thumbstick, the signal will get lost or confused between the Joy-Con, which is the controller, and the Switch unit, where the input you're putting in for like Link moving around, the thumbstick input will like get stuck in place or will lag behind what you're actually doing. And the tests I've seen have been like all about occlusion. So like if you have it under a desk or like behind your hand, or if your thumb is blocking something somewhere, like that's what ends up stopping the signal from smoothly going in. And that's happened to me, but not, I think it was weird. Like I played for 8 hours or something yesterday using just the Joy-Cons by themselves and didn't hit it once. And then, like, somewhere around hour 9 or 10, it's happened constantly. So I don't know if it's decalibrating or what.
Well, I remember on the during the early years of the PlayStation 3, before they redesigned the 6-axis, like, one of the 6-axis had tons of Bluetooth connectivity issues, and, like, it would get interference from routers and things like that. So, you know, the hope is that, you know, this issue is now clearly prevalent. Nintendo will find some way to firmware update it between now and then, but there's also the scenario where it's like the 6-axis and it's possibly a hardware Bluetooth issue, and that, like, hardware that we haven't quite figured out maybe interfering with it. Like, maybe it's your phone, you know, phones, you know, certain iPhones for some reason, like, cause an issue with it. It's, I mean, Nintendo, as far as I know, has not said anything about the issue, but you have to imagine they're, given that, like, this is a huge selling point for the hardware, that they're, you know, they've got people looking at it.
So I've heard from sources that dev units didn't have this problem. And this happens sometimes. Who knows? Hopefully this is something that can be fixed with firmware and not, like, a recall. It's extra frustrating because, like, it was one of those things where it was, like, I was basically going to start playing with the Pro Controller, because I sent a Pro Controller along with the two Joy-Cons, or the I guess they're two Joy-Cons? Left Joy-Con, right Joy-Con is one Joy-Con, or is that two Joy-Cons?
Well, no, they're two, because, you know, with, like, games like Bomberman, like, isn't the whole idea you can, like, play with it, you know, using just one, like, every button is on, the Joy-Con.
But because I heard about this bug, I was like, I should play with the Joy-Cons. But I've never had that problem with the Pro Controller, and I've played even more, I've played a lot with the Pro Controller, too, so I've played a mix, and, like, it would suck if the very expensive Pro Controller didn't have this problem.
I mean, that's the reason I haven't bought a Pro Controller, because I balked at the $70 price tag on,
like,
that thing.
The pricing for a lot of this stuff is ridiculous. Also, like, understand that the version of the whatever this thing is called, the dock, the controller dock thing, there's also a version of that they sent that is the one that lets you charge while using it. And, like, there's so many accessories. I hate the accessory prices. I hate the accessorization of this. Normally when I complain about itemization in games, it's like all these weapons are boring. But in this case, it's this shit is too expensive. This is bad.
Because what ships with the Switch, you can't charge while playing,
while playing. You can charge while... Yeah, you can't. You can't charge while playing.
Correct. I mean, conceivably, the Joy-Cons are supposed to last for far longer than a normal
person would be
playing.
I have not had a problem with that yet. But I also have access to the thing that can charge it. Like, I'm not using that right this second, but, like, I have gone between the two. So, and I do.
I am not going to spend whatever godly amount of money they're going to on that charge thing. So I will let you know how it works out.
You let me know. Other than that, like, there is. It's a very. I have no idea what the final Switch, like, UI looks like at this point. I don't know if that's what I'm seeing right now.
There's a big day one patch.
Exactly.
They did this with the Wii U as well, where there was, like, just a tons of things didn't work until that patch. Like, the eShop doesn't work now.
eShop doesn't work, but I don't even know if the basic UI and, like, homepage, so to speak, going to be updated. Who knows?
Reason they haven't released videos, because it's all going to look different.
There is a thing that I think is the smartest shit in the world. And I don't think that this is embargoed. Let me just double check. This second embargo, preview embargo, written, no teardowns. I don't think this is a teardown. I don't think this is a, there's, like, the share button is really smart. There's a thing you can do in the share with the share button that is going to do wonders for them, which is you can add text right to images. Like, not Snapchat style. Cause it's not like the thin Snapchat bar of text. It's just like, they're just going to make people are going to make a lot of memes, like, a lot. And that is really smart. Like, you hit the share button and one of the options is add text.
And that'll be a great place to share that. The fucking Miiverse.
Can't wait.
No, there's no Miiverse on the Switch.
Oh, wait, really? There's no more?
Yeah, they're just getting rid of the smartest thing they did socially on the Wii U.
That's bad.
Bring it back.
So that stuff, like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm again, I think that this is, when I see this device, I don't know that this is the device, but I think within 10 years, devices like this will be more and more prevalent. I could see these getting smaller. I could see these getting maybe a little bit bigger or, like, some other sort of connector. But, like, this is the sort of thing that makes me feel like, oh, right, of course the thing that something that I can fit, carry in my bag is also going to become my home console unit, or a home console unit. I don't know that it's going to replace the Xbox Ones and PS4s of the world, which are dedicated and need to be big and hefty to be able to do huge right. things. But we're getting to a point where like you can make some dope games on phones and on iPads. And this feels like a way forward for consoles that we hadn't considered, or for something like the Vita, or for something, you know, those sorts of units. This makes me feel like someone will get it right. If it's not this, then it will be something else. This doesn't feel gimmicky in the way that I thought it would, or the way that the Wii U did. Like, the Wii U didn't ever feel like anything other than Nintendo up to its old tricks again.
Well, they never came up with right. The idea was interesting, but the right. function of it, they never found
outside of Mario
decent
Maker.
Applications for it. Yeah, outside of Mario Maker. And whereas with the Switch, it's like immediately obvious, yeah. like, well, the function, the use of this mm-hmm. is already
here
good.
It is. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and I showed a friend of mine, we went out to the diner yesterday, and I was like, oh, hold up, let me play some Zelda at the diner.
And like, that's cool, that's
yeah.
really good.
Yeah, dude, I got really bacon good. And eggs, and we were like, let's just play some Zelda for a little bit.
Oh, and I like that a lot.
It was really good. Like, that was a cool, and they were super impressed by it to the degree they were like, oh, I thought this would look like a toy. Like I thought, and like yeah. I have the Neon controller, so it does look a little bit like a toy. So yeah, I'm not sure how it will be received in general right now. I think if it keeps having really public boosters like Jimmy Fallon, we will see it do very well. I think we both know that the initial run will have no problem selling out. The question is, where is it a year from now?
I'm excited to take this to show people that haven't yep. heard, like it's yep. it's a cool ass party trick,
and that's I think they're counting on it. Like I think 1-2 Switch, which apparently review copies are getting out there now. I've not had it yet, but that's a game that will.
That's going to be fun to like where you can just show yep. up with that Switch tablet, put it up on a stand, yep. take off those two Joy-Cons, and right. have like that
Let's
sounds
fight.
Fun.
And it's not. It doesn't have to. The thing that's wild is like it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be good the way most games are need to be in order to right. be a successful thing. It just needs to convince people to go spend a few $100s on something that feels cool. And I think 1-2 Switch should have been a pack-in 100% because that would have sold them so many fucking consoles. My suspicion is I bet we get a 1-2 Switch pack-in in the first year, or like a cheap 1-2 Switch.
I bet it's
Switch.
This fall. Like, yeah, you know. Yeah, like,
totally.
But,
Zelda and 1-2 Switch or Mario.
Ah, $50 for 1-2 Switch.
It's wild. It's too much. It's too much.
But anyway, it looks really fun.
I haven't played the other. I only played 4 games of the 28 or whatever. So, still, $50 is just a lot of money.
That's a lot. Of money.
I'm gonna dip into the question bucket real quick to see if there's okay. any really dope Zelda questions. We're gonna rapid fire.
That's right. People did ask about that.
Some
yeah.
of these are gonna be joke questions, like this one from Ashley Malone. In Mario games, it's become normal to play as his crazy and goofy brother, Luigi. Sometimes you have to beat the game before you can play as him. My question is, who would you like to play once you beat a Zelda game? For me, I'd play as Tingle.
Oh, that's good. I want to... What do they call the big troll creatures in Zelda?
Gorons?
Yeah, I want to be a Goron.
I want a game where I can play... I want, like... you know how they do the Zelda games where it's like, oh, it's the Triforce Adventures or the mm-hmm. Four Swords Adventures Tri...
Four Goron Adventure.
I want one where I get to play as
Forgon.
Yeah, I want to play Forgon. Forgon is it sounds like an indie game. It's the sequel to Gone Home. It's the prequel
stop,
to Gone Home.
Stop.
Forgon.
I'm not allowing you to continue that joke.
Apostrophe.
Nope, stop that. Nope. You're not allowed to keep doing that joke.
Thanks, Steve Gaynor. And also the rest of the Fulbright team. There's a whole team there. It's not just Steve. Shout out to the Fulbright. I want to play a game where it's like I have to be like a Goron, what's the underwater ones? Zora. I want to play as a little Deku. Oh, wait, I'm just describing Majora's Mask, which is a dope game.
Yeah, it is.
But I want a game like that where it's like, what if you had yeah. to play four? You'd like GTA 5 style switch between them. all right, here's one. This one comes in from David in the UK. Dear Waypoint Crew, thank you for answering my previous question about importing games. Since Austin asked for Zelda questions on his Twitter, here's another. Does Breath of the Wild have a disjointed sense of who Link is as a character? With the removal of the ability to change his name in addition to voice acting, I'd hoped he'd become a more defined character. However, omitting his voice to minor dialogue choices, like Skyward Sword, and even adding more clothing customization, I fear he might seem like an emptier vessel than before. All the best, David, London, UK. What I'll say is, the dialogue options you get let you paint a pretty clear picture of who Link is. And he's like a little snarky. It's a little bit like Walking Dead or another, you know, any of the Telltale games, and that by giving you a set of options, there sort of is a set of, there's a, it's almost as if it's painting you a picture of what type of person this could be, right?
Like you're not changing the actual plot, but you're shading the character's personality.
Exactly, exactly. And so, like, there are times when Link can be like, give me that fucking paraglider right now. I gotta go do some shit. Zelda, come on, you've heard. Or he can be like, so what's the deal with the paraglider? Or what, you know what I mean? And
right.
Both of those paint a pretty consistent image of who that is. I will say that the other thing is, like, he is an amnesiac character. They're doing that plot line.
Yep.
And the thing that's cool about that, or the thing that they managed to do well because of that, is that though he might not remember specific names or faces, like, his reaction still tells you something about his views on the world and, like, these people.
Right.
There are people that he feels warm towards, and you can tell that even though he doesn't necessarily remember who they are. So yeah, I think he's actually but he's also still a cipher in some ways. Like, he isn't quiet in cutscenes and stuff like that. All right, this one comes in, and I already see the word Skyward Sword, so it's going to be for you, Patrick.
Okay.
What's up, your point
Skyward through? Sword expert right here.
My name is Jason. My name is Jason Vegapedia on the internet. I want to add a little bit of context before I ask my question on Breath of the Wild. When I was about 6 years old, back in the mid '80s, my dad and I would play the original Legend of Zelda on the old school Nintendo Entertainment System. Back then, something like Zelda 1 felt like it had scope, size, and difficulty of a game that a game like Skyrim does today. I recently found out that my friend is playing Skyward Sword with his 4.5-year-old son. The dad plays the game, son gets sucked into the world, and occasionally helps dad solve puzzles, which makes dad super happy and proud. This sounds really good. This is the same way that my dad and I would play, but I was a bit older back then than my friend's son is today, so there's more controller passing going on. The original Zelda and Skyward Sword offered more freedom to explore dungeons in whatever order you discovered them, which made the game seem really wide open. With everything I'm hearing about Breath of the Wild, it eclipses Skyrim, my barometer for RPG scope these days, and size, scope, and difficulty, etc. My fear is that it might be too big, too hard, and maybe caters to a slightly older demo, possibly alienating the youngest minds from experiencing the whole game and turning off parents that play games whose valuable time is always very limited. Do you think that the newly expanded open world nature of the game will allow more accidental discovery of what the world map has to offer, or could it leave younger players and parents scratching their heads and turned off from experiencing the whole game? Thoughts? Love the site and podcast. Is that how you felt about... Did you feel like Skyward Sword had that same sort of feeling of openness and scope that...
No. I felt like Skyward Sword was just, like, big for the sake of being big, as opposed to being filled with a lot of... Cool stuff to do. You were supposed to just give me the dungeon.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess one way I would reframe this question is, like, how much can you just mainline this game and ignore what's happening around you?
You could, I guess. I don't know. There's so much stuff between places. Like, earlier I had said there's the kind of structure of, like, go to these four shrines, but there's stuff in the middle is the structure of the game. It just kind of zooms out and spreads those four things out to where it's like, oh, there's one in each of the four corners, so to speak. That is true, and there's so much stuff between those spaces, and there's no way to fast travel to them before you've already been there. You can go to... Let me tell you this really quick. Mm-hmm. You can go climb a tower, and then it adds the area to the map, and then you can fast travel to the tower. You can fast travel to other stuff, too. I know, I can't believe I like a game with towers in it in 2017. Right, well, like, the Nintendo, right? Like, half the time what Nintendo is trying to do is like, improve on stuff that already exists or put their spin on it. And the other time, the other half is them doing something weird and different. This is very...
I will say, to Horizon's credit, they also do the tower thing, but it's fucking cool as hell.
It's cool as hell.
And you have to climb the equivalent of a robotic brontosaurus.
It's great.
And jam a spear in its head in order to unlock the map around you. That part's pretty good. I never got tired of that.
And there are only like five of those too.
Yeah,
which is
smart. It's very good. That's what was critical about why it was remained interesting was because it was a puzzle to figure out how to get onto the creature, and then you didn't have to do it many times, so you never got bored of the actual act.
And so what I'll say here is, like, the thing that they're doing with the towers in this is the areas around the towers have been different each time, so it can be a puzzle of how to get up there to begin with, and then you get there and maybe it has barbed spikes on it, or maybe it's guarded by bokoblins, or, like, the area around it is guarded by bokoblins or something. So, like, there are definitely some challenges built into it in a really smart way that make each one of them fun so far. It's never just, like, oh, I'm at the tower, go, which would... But who knows? Maybe seven towers from now, I'll be like, I'm sick of these fucking towers. But I will say, the thing that I think would make this a cool game to play with a kid is that, like, the thing I did as a kid and still do as a player, but maybe a little more thoughtfully, is I go like, oh, can I do blank? And
right.
You often can in this. You know, after we played Dungeon World, I talked to the GM, Adam Coble, and I said, man, that was a wild game we ran, right? Like, the group that we played with was doing stuff I never anticipated any group doing. And he's like, yeah, but I really enjoyed that, because normally when people play games for the first time, and he's talking about tabletop role-playing games, but I think this is true for most games, they ask questions. They say, can I do blank? And the GM, or to broaden the scope out more, the game says no. Like, no, you can't do that. And he said the thing he wanted, he doesn't get a chance to play with people for the first time ever very often. And so when he does, right. He wants to say yes. And this is a game that says yes. It says, like, yeah, you could totally climb this ancient ruin if you figure it out. And if you do, I'm going to reward you with a cool bow, which right from the gate lets you know that, like, if you... Lots of games let you point at mountains and then go to them.
Mm-hmm.
This one, when I point at that mountain, I don't just go there, I find something. And that finding something could be a weird puzzle to solve to get something that could help me expand my inventory, or it could be a fight against a unique enemy who might drop a special resource. And in that way, it feels like it figured out what Dragon's Dogma wanted to do and then, like, pushes it a little bit further. Dropping all the hits. Patrick. Dropping them. Far Cry 2. Dragon's Dogma. I like this game. I'm just going to be
You can
the
only
best
say that once
me.
Per embargo. You can also, only say, right, I like only, this game once.
Okay, exactly.
Don't say you like the game twice.
Another couple quick ones. I haven't podcasted in like a week and a half. I need to get
That's
this
true.
Podcast.
Yeah, we got this. Yeah.
Which game, this comes in from Jinoru, which game in the Zelda series have you derived the most meaning from? Also, how much tingle is enough tingle? Never enough tingle.
Yeah, that's the correct answer. Majora's Mask is the one that has the most thematic resonance, the one that is actually I've gotten more out of as I've, like, I played Majora's Mask. You know, it's a game about death and like cycles and things like that.
Yeah.
And I didn't pick up on any of that when I played it when I was whatever old when I was a kid. But then replaying it as an adult, like, the game is, like, exceptionally dark and like has, like, very direct commentary on some issues that have, like, a lot of resonance for me as an adult that I just didn't pick up on when I was a kid. So that's the game that continues to
sticks with you.
I stuck with me, and I've continued to get more out of it as I've gotten older, and those themes have the themes of death didn't mean anything when you're 8, but mean something quite different when you're 32.
Right, totally. For me, it's probably Ocarina, again, for what I said before, which is that, like, it was one of those games that shook what I expected from my games, and, like, from open world games, or from their, you know, it introduced this notion of, like, oh, wow, I can get on this horse and just go around in circles, and that feels good. Which is also, like, why Mario 64 worked. It was like, oh, it just feels good to move Mario around and jump and stuff. But, like, there was something different about that for me, doing that in a world with other NPCs in it. Like, versus doing it in a world of just, like, jumping on Goomba's heads, which was really fun. But, like, I really wanted a world with people and story, and that game definitely shifted my expectations in terms of how a game with a story could feel at the same time. Like, it wasn't just point-and-click adventure games. It wasn't just isometric RPGs. Like, you could play this thing that had direct action, where the action was fun and compelling, but was also a world that I wanted to learn more about. I'm gonna just, maybe this will be the last one, because this is interesting. This comes in from Ryan, who also sends a photo of his dog, who is on top of a little mountain of dirt. It's really cute. I have a really strong memory of how exciting Ocarina of Time was for me when I got it. This probably isn't accurate, but I kind of remember it as being my first open world or make your own fun kind of game, which we kind of spoke to and against before. I remember how exciting it was to first walk out into Hyrule Field. The music that plays when you get out there still hits just right. It makes me feel excited for the start of a new day. But mostly, pause real quick. The music in Breath of the Wild is dope. Like, it's little, oh, it's so good. The fight, And back to Ryan's. But mostly I remember the weird little adventures I would create for myself. I would go buy milk from the ranch and other supplies as though preparing for a long journey. I would set goals for myself. Simple things like walk the path to Death Mountain and then set out on the trail. I recall taking my time so that it felt like the trip would actually take a few in-game days. I think Zelda has always been about exploration for me. So Breath of the Wild looks really exciting and it really feels like a Zelda game to me. I'm curious, and curious is in bold, as if it's a Zelda character talking to let you know that curiosity is the thing that's most important in this conversation. I'm curious, what makes a Zelda game for you? Which is interesting.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, exploration. If I had to take like one word and just be like more extraordinarily
than
broad.
More than like dungeons.
Yeah, dungeons, like puzzles, like those are, you know, I feel like this is similar to that conversation we've been having about, you know, ongoing to kind of define what a Souls-like is. And you know, like if Souls-like is mystery, then like Zelda for me is exploration, and then like you know the tentacles and kind of like come out from there. But I think you could take dungeons out of Zelda and still make a Zelda game. You know, if you know, I don't think that is necessarily a defining characteristic of what I enjoy. Like I enjoy the puzzles within those dungeons, but I don't know if like a dungeon structure is inherent to a Zelda game for me, like because that was part of the reason Majora's Mask was so appealing, was that yes, it had dungeons, but it upended the traditional Zelda structure in so many other ways that it was still about exploration, but it was like exploration in a different sense.
Totally.
And so like that's key to me, is just that sense of I guess curiosity and exploration and being rewarded for it.
Yeah, well, even the thing that's cool about it is like even boss fights, even dungeons are still about exploration, right? Like, it's about like, okay, what's this boss's pattern? What's it do? How do
what's the trick?
Deal with it? Yeah, totally. And so even if that trick is all about very like precise combat or bow shooting or hook shotting, that's still a sort of exploration. So I can kind of see that. Though I worry always that finding an answer like that might be too broad in such a way that like, you end up that can apply to a bunch of games that maybe exploration isn't core for or something like that. But yeah, I think that that's...
A big spaces, like, right? Like big spaces to explore.
Scope
and, it's also,
and scale, yeah.
Yeah, scope, like, I mean, you like the maps of various Zelda games are often in... Like the ones that I didn't care for are the ones where I don't remember where things are. Like I don't remember anything about Skyward Sword. Like, I mean, I gave that game, you know, 4 stars. I'm like, I enjoyed it as a game. I enjoyed it less in the sort of like broader Zelda canon, if you were to hold it up to those games or think of it in that way. But like, you know, like, yeah, like the moment he talks about, or if maybe that was a previous letter about I think we all talk about the moment where you step into Hyrule Field for the first time in Ocarina of Time. Like that is something I'll never forget and is something that still like gives me chills, even though it looks archaic aesthetically. In 2017, but I guess I don't think dungeons are necessarily specific, but there's probably something that is a little more concrete than just exploration, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's still probably, I'm gonna co-sign that for now. We'll think about it later.
I like thinking about games in these terms. I enjoy like being forced to actually like step back and define it in a way that I stumble through it because I've never thought about them in that way.
The thing that I like to do is do that and then also remind myself that any final definition or term we come up with is going to be reductive and will never be good enough in some way.
Well, the journey to coming up with an explanation is more interesting than the answer, right? Like I felt that way whenever doing the Giant Bomb Game of the Year stuff. Like I cared less about the final list as much as the journey of getting to that final list was interesting. And so like when we talk about like defining a Souls like or defining a Zelda, like the conversation about like what everyone comes to the table with and what they bring to it and what they think is interesting and how we explore that is more interesting than I think the characteristic we end up with.
Right, totally. Well, that speaks to me to the thing I was saying before about like not knowing if open world fatigue is really a thing and that maybe those are just other, because like the thing that I've realized after playing these things, like open world just we shouldn't think about that term as a genre anymore. Like it's the opposite thing of the Souls-like conversation we've had, which is that like we've been talking about Souls clones or Souls-likes or whatever. But on the other end, we've been talking about open world games, or like I think for a long time people talked about GTA clones and then eventually realized like, well, there's actually a bunch of games that have big open worlds. We're just going to call those all open world games, and we're going to put GTA 5 and Skyrim and The Witcher and, you know, Wind Waker and anything with an open world in the same category, or like it overlaps in that same category. And like the way that Watch Dogs 2, Horizon, Mafia 3 and Breath of the Wild all use their open world is so dramatically different, like in terms of pacing, in terms of how missions are given to you, in terms of traveling from place to place, in terms of like,
or whether it's just like an aesthetic thing for like to mask going from objective to objective, or if the world itself is something you're supposed to meaningfully interact with.
And so like I get why we are going to continue talking about open world games. Me like putting a banner in the ground is going to stop us from it. I'm not trying to do that. This isn't me saying I'm going to stop talking about open world games in general. But it is a reminder. It has been a reminder for me that the language that we use is never fully, does not sync up completely to a specific real concept in the world, that it's always going to be lacking a little bit. Not to get all like semiotics 101, but like there's always a disconnect between the sign and the signifier. There's always going to be something, or the signified. There's always going to be a little bit of a detachment there. And the thing that's cool about that is that we get to then figure out what you want from an open world game, or what sort of games with open world appeal to you, and then find those. For me, it's obviously things like Dragon's Dogma. It's obviously things like Far Cry, the Far Cry series. It's obviously things where the world exists as a sandbox and a playground for me to experiment and for me to uncover cool stuff about the world. And for other players, it's going to be just a setting for discrete missions and like hand scripted stuff. I think Watch Dogs 2 did that super well this year or last year, where like you basically just went from place to place and then did a mission in that place. And I think that worked really well. Mafia, I think that pretty well too, or hit some weird middle ground there. So I don't know, like I like talking about this stuff like you, because it helps me like chip away at my understanding of something. I'm never looking to say like this is the one true, no one should like fucking Horizon. Anybody who likes Horizon is bad at games. Like, no, fuck off, chill. Like, I just don't like it and as much as most people, and that's okay. It just means I get to play other games that I like just as much or more, you know? So that's, I think that might do it for us this week.
This is a long one.
This was a long one, but Zelda. So, and I'm gonna have more to talk about Zelda once that embargo is up. I don't know when the full embargo is up, because there's too many.
At least we'll be doing stuff when that machine comes out next week. That's true. Danielle will be getting one. Exactly. I'll be getting one.
Yep.
Provide a Target. March 2nd. Please show up on Friday. Target. Come on, Target.
That would be good.
I wish I'd ordered it from Amazon, but I didn't get it. Now I got to rely on Target.
Good luck.
I know.
It's
infuriating because it's a Friday. It'd be one thing if like, oh, this machine is coming out on a Monday. Right. You missed the shipment. Yeah. It's coming on Tuesday. It's like, you miss Friday, you fucked till Monday.
You fucked. Hey, you miss Friday, you fucked. What are you gonna do that weekend? You're just gonna be miserable as everyone else uses the new chef.
I am. I'm gonna walk away. I guess I'll just go play with my child.
Here's what I'll do, Patrick. Because it'll be out on that Friday. If you don't have it, what I'll do is every tweet I make will just be a share function tweet from the Switch with whatever I want to say as just text over a shared picture from the Switch.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's for you. So you can get a taste. A little taste.
It's good.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to us this week on Waypoint Radio. Thank you for welcoming me home from Los Angeles and my vacation. I'm glad to be back. I will see all of you on Monday. Make sure to go listen to the person who does our theme music, Bowen. You can find out info on him at waypoint.zone/BOEN. You can read all the stuff that we do at waypoint.vice.com, digitalpyramids.com, bastionfucks.com, new.donk.city, big donk city, different place.
Oh, it's big donk, it's got its own problems.
A specific business inside of new donk city. Where else? What else can you find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker? Patrick, you can find Patrick at Patrick Klepek.
Yep,
that's good.
I'm thinking about those big donks.
Twitter.com/waypoint, Facebook.com/waypointvice, YouTube.com/waypointvice. Find us on iTunes and give us a rating. It's not a thing I don't normally say, like, hey, remember, word of mouth, etc. But hey, word of mouth, etc. Give us a rating on iTunes. It would help us a lot. It's nice to get those ratings and see.
No, but like seriously, like in order for new people to listen to it, like the reviews are like the way that iTunes promotes and things like that. So like if like just if you get a 5 seconds, you don't have to write a review. Just go in and star it. Three stars is fine. It's whatever. I'll take the stars.
I think we're at least a 4. There's no half stars, are there?
No. It's because 3.5 stars we could settle for.
I could settle for 3.5 stars. I'm not asking for much.
I feel like 3.5 stars today, so that I would accept it.
I feel like 4 stars today. That's not five. You get, don't get me wrong.
You've got Zelda. You get the extra.
I got Zelda. I just got back from a vacation where it was rainy the whole time. I'm, you know, 4-star. If it had been sunny in LA instead of pouring for 4 days for a week straight, I would be a 5-star. But you know, I think that's going to do it for us this week. Thank you for tuning in. Catch us on Monday for another edition of Waypoint Radio. Peace.